Let's do it.
Talk Radio.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, 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 oh. Oh, yeah. It's in 5 hours. It's 365 days of motivation and personal empowerment just for you. It's your man, Marvin Rowan and the crew. Coming to you live. African-American Empowerment Saturday, and we're going to rip this thing up right about now. Come on. Better love.
Well, that's what I got.
Oh, yeah. Better love. There's no better love than for self and kind. No better love. Welcome to Empowerment Saturday. It's Black History Month, and we have our Black History Month edition coming up for you in just a few. Let me tell you about the tenets of the NAAEA. NAAEA, the National African American Empowerment Association. Our mission is simply one thing: to educate, motivate, inspire, and empower our people to meet the needs of African American people wherever they are. We know our history, and we're going to celebrate that, but it's just not limited to the history that we have in America, because our history spans further than that. But even if you look at our history here in this country, it's great. Oh, it's great. If you, any group of people have gone through what we've gone through, oh, yeah, it's greatness. We're in the mix. And so today I want to talk to you about the tenets of the NAAEA. It's really simple. It's the peace concept and the peace process. Here it is. We need African Americans, people of color, whatever you want to call ourselves, of African descent. We need a political agenda. We just do. You have to have a political agenda wherever you are. Understanding politics and how this political system and a political process works in America, and effectively use that system as tools for our liberation. That's right. That we educate and develop our people, that the politics in our communities, whether that's local, whether that's state, whether that's national, benefit us. And we have political agendas that help us to lobby for the things that we need, whether that's better schools, better books, better supplies, better institutions, right? That help us to help ourselves, to help us recover from the tragedy and the trauma of our experiences here in America. Next, it is E, economics. We need an economic agenda. We're just spending money. Just spend, 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 spend. We have the gross national product of a nation. If we would use that money, understand how to use money, how to use capitalism to our best advantage, we can then build institutions that define our own reality. We can at any time. All we have to do is coalesce and come together to do that. We have to have an economic agenda that create economic platforms that will allow us to understand how money works, and use those tools to be able to educate, train, and develop our young people that they can be effective at understanding the capitalistic system, how it works, and then how to manage their system. And now the A, it's athletics. Health, wellness, fitness, nutrition. You have to take care of your temple, your body, your mind, your spirit. You have to take care of your mental health, your physical health, your emotional health, your spiritual health. You do. You're going to have to understand the benefits of taking care of your body, taking care of your mind, understanding the importance of de-stressing, pushing away from the table and all the processed products, and getting off the medications, getting a workout plan, and being able to structure yourself that you're able to be effective and not sick. It is true when it comes to health disparities, African Americans are leading the league in health disparities, sickness and disease. We are, and we got to change that. You're going to have to be able to make a commitment that you're going to start taking care of yourself, and that has to be a community-wide effort. We have to do it. We have to change our mindsets. We've got to push away from the things that continue to make us sick. We're going to have to do that, and we're going to have to educate ourselves on it. Now, C. C is culture, like this program, relevant cultural programs to help teach, train, and develop our people to have pride in ourselves, particularly our young people, chin out, chest up, that we're proud, proud of who we are. We have to be. And that cultural program has to be tied, like this program here, to your history, to educate and develop yourselves, and that our young people are confident in who we are. And then we can teach them about our ancient past, and then we become builders. And we rebuild ourselves mentally, physically, emotionally, socially, and culturally. And last is education, a comprehensive education that helps us to understand what we need to do in community, wherever we are, and that we use that to our advantage, and that we love ourselves more than ever, and that we teach love in our community and respect for each other in our community, and that we are responsible movers, and that we're helping each other build community and society properly with respect and love for one another in relation to one another. That's the key. That's the peace process. All you have to do, simply, there's no admission fees for being a member. All you have to do is make a commitment that you want to be a part of the movement for African-American empowerment. www.naaea.weebly.com. As simple as that. Go out to the website and check out the mission of the ministry. And now for my man, Stan Macklin.
Man, Stan, the deck is packed today. I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you.
Yeah, man, we got the deck.
I just love it when you're able to explain the pillars of the National African American Empowerment Association. You know, when we have institutions that define our own reality, quit trying to get in to fit in, this is where it's at, and this is what we're doing.
Brothers and sisters, that man you just heard was my co-host for many years. He left us last year a little bit, about last month ago. And so I honor him with that because he said, no more getting in to fit in. And I believe that. It's time for us to stand on our own two feet and reckon with ourselves now. It's time for us to take the reins on who we're going to be, inspired, motivated, and empowered. Let's develop institutions that define our own reality, that help our children have economics and have institutions that we design for them to go and work and train and develop in, and that they become the beacon of light for the world to follow. And now, bringing in Brother George, it's time for the Willie Lynch and Kwanzaa segment. Here we go. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Brother George.
Yes, sir.
Welcome to the show.
I'm
how
here.
Are you?
I'm doing
all right.
Fine,
we got,
what
we got
like
a great show today.
Yes, sir. What I would like to do today is I would like to extend my time to Bruce for those segments today, because I'm hoping that Bruce could spend a little time in the beginning explaining how Black History Month came into existence in the first place. And I don't want to take away from his normal speaking time. So I'm hoping that we can negotiate that.
So, all right. I like that. And so what I want you to do, if you can, before we get started, is to introduce our community to Dr. Bruce and his work from what you know, and then we'll bring him in.
Yes, sir. Well, you know, once again, I met Bruce through my brother-in-law, and Bruce at that time had a bookstore in Durham, North Carolina. And, you know, when I first met him, he was a tall guy, and, you know, he had a great collection of books, you know, his bookstore. And so he had a audio tape. Back then we used to listen to audio tapes. He gave me that audio tape, and the name of that audio tape was it was a tape on What They Never Told You in History Class. He did an audio tape called What They Never Told You in History Class, and I'm hoping that one day he can redo that one the same way as the Natural Creation. But after I listened to that tape, I realized that this brother was like a multi-genius. He knew a lot of information from a lot of different disciplines and a lot of different information about history and things that we've accomplished and all of that. And all of that was in that one tape. And from that day forward, you know, I was totally impressed. And I continued to go down to his bookstore and bring other people, you know, to Durham to purchase books. And he really made it possible for me to build the huge library of black books that I have today. And, you know, I always feel indebted to Dr. Bridges. And, you know, at this time, I would like to, introduce him to everyone that's on the line today that's in the listening audience. This is Dr. Bruce Bridges.
Dr. Bruce, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Brother Marvin, and also Brother George for that very, very, very good but brief introduction. Thank you very much to both of you.
You're welcome, sir. It's Black History Month, right? So if we can, before we get started, can you share just a little bit about what you feel is important about Black History Month, and then it's on you, brother. Take it away. Thank you, Dr. Bruce.
Okay, so much important, but one thing I would like to do, and that is to explain to our people and to take my time in doing so. That's why I appreciate you having me here on the program every other Saturday. And to those listeners who might not know that, but every other Saturday I'll be at the same number that you're listening to me on now, or on the podcast on your computer that you're listening to me on. Not next Saturday, but Saturday after next, I'll be back again reviewing my book, Recapturing the African Mind. So I want to invite everybody to come back. But one thing I always like to do, this being African American History Month, which of course is too short a time to discuss the history and the heritage of the oldest living people on the face of the planet. It's just too short. But since this is what we have, we do it this month, but we do it all the time. But we make a special emphasis to put out facts and information about our heritage during the month of February, which actually started in 1926 by Dr. Carter G. Woodson. The first year African American History Month was ever celebrated, and it was not a month, it was only a day, African American History Day. In 1926, Carter G. Woodson established that. And eventually, he kept working and working and working, and eventually, Negro History Day, as it was called, actually Negro History Day, became Negro History Week. And then he kept plugging along, kept fighting, and was eventually to, we have it now as a month. Just a little background on Carter G. Woodson, Brother Marvin, and that is Dr. Woodson was born in 1875 in New Canton, Virginia, a small town in Virginia, 1875, and he was sent back to the ancestors in 1950. 1875 to 1950, to those who are taking notes, because I always like to kind of keep in mind that some people who might have a pen or pad or your iPad taking some notes, so I might repeat just so you can get this. But Dr. Woodson was born in New Canton, Virginia, of ex-slave parents, and he and his brother Robert left New Canton and went to Huntington, West Virginia, and he eventually went to school in Kentucky. And Dr. Woodson became, well, let me just mention too, he didn't finish high school until he was about 21 or 22 years of age. Dr. Woodson did in Douglas High School in New Canton, Virginia. And when Dr. Woodson finished high school, he actually came back after he got his degrees and became the principal at Douglas High School, where he had matriculated. Now, Dr. Woodson always tells the story that he learned to read by reading stories from the newspapers to many of the coal miners that were in Virginia at the time when he was growing up as a youngster. The coal miners had a little canteen area or a little refreshment area or a little area, cafe area where they would eat lunch and take breaks. And Dr. Woodson would gather black newspapers from around the country and read articles about black people and what black people were doing in various places around the country. And so that's just a little background of Dr. Woodson. But Dr. Woodson, to move forward, he became the first African-American to receive a Ph.D. in history from the University of Chicago, second only to Dr. W.E.B. Du Bois. Dr. Woodson also received a master's from the University of Chicago, and I said Ph.D., Ph.D.'s from Harvard, second to W.B. Du Bois, beg your pardon. But he received a master's from University of Chicago, but he received his Ph.D. from Harvard University, second black Ph.D. from Harvard, second only to W.B. Du Bois. And after Dr. Woodson got his degrees, he made the statement one time. He said, "I've studied and learned, and I've learned the history, been a history major. I've learned the history of Spain and Portugal and France and Germany." And he said, I've learned history of all these people around the earth, but I know nothing about myself." And I want those of us, those of you who are tuned in, to think about what I'm saying here. We know all this history and all these details about what goes on Netflix and what goes on Hulu, and we know about Jeopardy and who's winning Jeopardy this week, and we know all about the stars and entertainers that are put before us. But compare what we know about other people to how much we know about ourselves. I want to repeat that. I want you to think, those who are tuned in to the program today, and I always say this to everybody who I talk to or teach or speak or when I get a chance, I want you to do something that most of us have never done, and that is to think, to think, to think. And we know all about everything, these television programs, it's almost like we're in the families of some of these white people on these television programs that we watch. We know so much about them, but we know almost nothing about ourselves. So Dr. Woodson said, after that realization, he began to study and learn and learn and learn as much as he possibly could about black people. And Dr. Woodson, his first book was called The Education of the Negro. And then in 1933, he published his own books, because there were no black publishing houses who would publish black books at the time. So Dr. Woodson started his own publishing company, and he started the organization called the Association for the Study of Afro-American Life and History. And Dr. Woodson published his books, and he also published books by other black scholars and writers who could not get their books published by white publishing companies. So Dr. Woodson was a businessman, he was a scholar, and he was an institution builder, which is how he relates a great deal, Brother Marvin, to what you and Brother George are trying to do on this program, and you mentioned earlier when you spoke, and that is about building institutions. And So Dr. Woodson did that. So that's just a little information on Dr. Woodson and why it was in February. A lot of people don't know it, but he chose February for Negro History Day, second week February, because of the birthday of Abraham Lincoln and the birthday of Frederick Douglass. And so that was the honor that he gave them for Black History Month. So that's just a little bit of history on Black history. But those of you who watch YouTube a lot, and I know some of you do, a lot of you do, Go on YouTube and listen about Carter G. Woodson. You can pick up some good information about Dr. Woodson. So, Brother Marvin, that's a little information on Dr. Woodson before I get started.
Let me jump in for one second.
Yeah, please.
Just
please.
Welcome
of course,
in our
it's
listeners.
Your program. Yes,
Let's
sir.
Thank the listeners for joining us today. The deck and the lines are full, and we want to thank our new listeners, right? And if you're just listening online, if you feel like you want to call in and ask Dr. Bruce a question, it's 845-277-9250 is our call-in line. Again, welcome one, welcome all. We're glad you're here to our online classroom. And again, we welcome Dr. Bruce in. I'll turn it over to you, Dr. Bruce.
All right. So last week we began our discussion on Recapturing the African Mind, my book. And we just about finished chapter one in the book. And like you and George said, I'm just taking my time and just going through it, and don't want to leave anything out, and give you a chance to ask some questions at the end. But just to briefly go over last week we talked about the natural creation and how that's where the African mind first began to study and to learn. As a matter of fact, chapter one is called The African Mind and the Natural Creation. And we talked about Gerald Massey as one of our sources who talked about this area of Africa called Egypt, where that mind began to grow and to develop. And we also discussed how the father or mother of creation, depending on how you want to look at it, that's another lecture, in his or her design of this creation of which we are a part, after everything was created in the natural world, the sun, the moon, the stars, everything that's around us, the last creation was the creation of humanity, human beings. And that was a reason that was done. And the reason was so that the human mind, when it emerged onto the planet in the heads of black people in Africa, when that human mind was formed and developed, it had to have a classroom from which to learn and to grow. So the sun was out there, 93 million miles from the earth. The moon was and is out there. The stars are out there. The planets are there. The Nile River is there. The Amazon River is there. The mountains are there. Mount Kilimanjaro is there. The stars, everything was here so that the human mind would have something to feed upon. And I must give credit to my development of this lecture, The Natural Creation and the Growth of the Human Mind, to Wallace D. Muhammad. Many years ago, I used to listen to Wallace D. Muhammad when he took over as the leader of the Nation of Islam, and he used to do a lecture similar to this, and I just went a little further and developed it and saw some things into it that I'd like to share with people. But he did a lecture about how the human mind first or initially grows on what's around it, what's in its environment, and that's how we were able to create gravity and to create calculus and create metallurgy and to create botany, and all the fields of study that we are involved in were created from the minds of black people in the Nile Valley after studying what the Creator had put around us. I want to make this clear so that people can understand what I'm talking about. So everything was put here before we were here, and then when we were here, we were put into a classroom. The classroom didn't have any textbooks like we have today, but the classroom was the natural creation. That was the original classroom. Now, even the Greeks, as we talked about on last week, the Greeks like Pythagoras and Anaximander and Thales and Socrates, Plato, Aristotle, or Aristotle, if you pronounce it that way, they all studied from African sources. And that's basically where we left on last week. We talked about the fact that Pythagoras studied for 22 years in the ancient Egyptian mystery systems under black scholars, black men and black women, in what was called the mystery system. It's where Pythagoras went to school for 22 years, not 3 years to get a master's degree, 2 years to get a master's degree, or four years to get a doctorate degree, but he studied for 22 years. And I always like to give sources, as my friend Dr. William Rogers says. You can read a book called The Life of Pythagoras by a writer by the name of Jambilicus. And Thomas Taylor wrote a book talking about the life of Pythagoras, and he talks about the fact that Pythagoras did not superficially study all that the Egyptians had to offer, but spent, and I quote, therefore, 22 years in Egypt, in the temples, astronomizing and geometrizing, and was initiated not in a superficial or surface way or casual manner. He was initiated in all the mysteries of the gods. And that's another lecture we can talk about at another time, the ancient Egyptian mystery system. That's another another lecture there. But anyway, the root of it was the natural creation, and African men and women developed the arts and sciences as we know them today, and then the Greeks began to study what we ourselves had begun to learn. And we also find that there was no phenomenon that sparked the imagination of early humans as greatly as did the spectacle of the celestial sphere, or the sphere in the sky, the heavens. They sought reasons for things beyond their comprehension. The Africans compared the celestial to the terrestrial, as we talked about last week. When I say they compared the celestial to the terrestrial, they compared what was in the heavens above to the terrestrial or to what's on the earth below. And they knew that there was a relationship between what occurred in the heavens above and what occurred in the earth beneath. And this is one thing as historians and scholars have to understand, is that there are relationships between things that happen in Africa and things that happen in England, or things that happen in Peru and what happened in the Fiji or the Fuji Islands around the earth. There are relationships always. And humans have always sought explanation for the workings of the universe. If there's a lack of knowledge to provide explanation, then the imagination goes to work. And the mind of the human being will always invent what he or she feels that will be a satisfactory explanation. So the human mind is the source and the origin of what it is that we're talking about. And we also noticed that there was several gods in ancient Kemet, or Egypt, if you want to use that term, such Osiris or Osiru, if you want to use that word. And Osiris was really one of the major gods of ancient Egypt. And when you start to look at Christmas and Christianity and begin to compare the so-called Jesus that we worship, you will find that Jesus was really synonymous with Osiris. And this was found from studying the natural, because Osiris was a sun god. And people studying from the natural creation saw the sun rising every day, saw the sun setting every day. So the sun was personified into Osiris. And Osiris was born on or near December 25th. That's when the sun is born. All the days before December 25th began to get shorter. But on December 25th, the days began to get longer. So the ancients said that the sun is born. They were talking about the sun and the sky. But those shrewd manipulators and master concoctors of lie falsehood took the U from the word sun and talked about its birth on December 25th and transferred it to a created individual named Jesus and said that he was born on December 25th. That's another story for another time, but just want to make the point at the point here that it came from studying the natural creation. Osiris was born of a virgin, as the story goes, of Jesus born of a virgin. Osiris was born in a cave or a stable, so was Jesus born in the stable. They worked for the salvation of humanity, just showing you some of the similarities between Jesus the Christ and Osiris. They were both called saviors, mediators, and healers. They were overcome by evil powers. And after they were slain, they both arose from death and ascended to heaven at Easter. Same story. So the whole story of Jesus and his birth, life and resurrection is actually the same as Osiris out of ancient Egypt and out of Africans studying what's around them. We saw the sun rising. We saw the sun setting. We saw the sun producing crops and the sun causing things to happen in our environment. And all of this was put into Christianity. Now, a good source for this is the works of John G. Jackson, who wrote a book called Christianity Before Christ. And he's a scholar that many of you really should know about, John G. Jackson. And I had a privilege to meet John G. Jackson somewhere, I guess, in the mid-1980s at his home in Chicago, Illinois. And this is when I was in my store, the Note Bookstore in Durham, and I took a trip to Chicago because I had read Introduction to African Civilizations, which is another source that's very good for our students and our learners, by John G. Jackson. Introduction to African Civilizations by John G. Jackson, and also Christianity Before Christ by John G. Jackson. But John G. Jackson was from South Carolina, as a matter of fact. I think it's from somewhere like Camden, South Carolina. And he went to New York, and he lived in New York time, the Harlem Renaissance, along with County Cullen and Langston Hughes and Alain Locke and Zora Neale Hurston and some of the other well-known African-Americans during the time that they say Harlem was in vogue, which they call the Renaissance. But Jackson was also a lecturer in the Black Studies Department at Rutgers University. And since I mentioned that too, it made me think of something else that I wanted to mention, and that is the fact that when you look at African Studies Departments, Pan-African Studies, Departments of Africology, African history departments around the country, you have to trace them back to Carter G. Woodson, because Carter G. Woodson almost single-handedly pushed for the recognition of Africans in the history of America and indeed in the history of the world. So when we start talking about Virginia Commonwealth University and the Virginia Union and North Carolina Central University and A&T and University of Milwaukee and Wayne State University and Kent State that has Black Studies now, which Nathan had and several other people fought for in the 60s. But to trace it back to its root, when you talk about African Studies and people being proud and honoring their heritage, you have to talk about Carter G. Woodson. And that's what to mention him as I thought about the fact that Jackson taught and was a lecturer at the Black Studies Department at Rutgers University. He also was a visiting professor at New York University and a lecturer also in Chicago. And he taught comparative religion. You see, all of this is a part of African studies and is a part of history and the heritage of Black people. So the study of the natural creation by the ancient Egyptians had a tremendous influence upon Orthodox Christianity. And when we look at it, we can see that the entire Bible, there's another author that some of our students who are taking notes might want to study by the name of Alvin Boyd Kuhn, A-L-V-I-N, Alvin Kuhn, K-U-H-N, Alvin Boyd Kuhn. And he wrote a book called Who Is This King of Glory? Who Is This King of Glory by Alvin Boyd Kuhn. And he discusses the transmission of the scriptures of ancient Egypt into the Christian Bible. He discusses the transmission of the scriptures of ancient Kemet into the Christian Bible. And he even says in his book, as I quote him in my book on page 40 of Recapturing the African Mind, he says that the entire Christian Bible, creation legend, descent into Exodus from Egypt, ark and flood allegory, Israelite history, Hebrew prophecy and poetry, gospels, epistles, and revelation imagery, all are now proven to have been the transmission of ancient Egypt's scrolls and papyri into the hands of later generations, which knew neither their true origin nor their fathomless meaning. Now, let me just go back over and dissect it. He says that the entire Bible, all of it, the entire Bible is actually now proven to have been the transmission of the scrolls and papyri. That's just plural for papyrus, papyri, papyrus, papyrus, from which you get the word paper. But they have been the transmission of ancient Egyptian scrolls and papers into the hands of later generations, which knew neither their true origin nor their fathomless meaning. See, and so this is what Alvin Boyd Coombs says in his book and a lot of other sources. And as Brother George says in my introduction, I am the type of person, the type of student and who likes to draw from a lot of sources, because we in this society, and as George says too, I'll sometimes talk about history, but I can also relate history to science and mathematics, and also relate it to what's happening in the heavens and what's happening on the earth and what's happening in various parts of the world, because knowledge is one. And this is what the ancient Africans learned during the study of the natural creation in ancient times, that knowledge was one. There's a relationship between botany and history. There's a relationship between art and mathematics. There's even a relationship between basketball and football and mathematics. You got to know some kind of mathematics. LeBron James does. He doesn't know he knows it, to order to put the ball in from a certain distance and to hit in a certain place and all these kinds of things. I mean, that's the physics. They have to understand physics to a certain extent, you see. And this is what George Washington Carver did himself. As I begin to conclude our lecture for the day, so that you can go to your phone line, but George Washington Carver would meet his students at Tuskegee Institute in Alabama. Not in the classroom, he would meet his students at 4 a.m., as I talk about in my book, Recapturing the African Mind on page 41. At 4 a.m., he would walk into the woods and bring back plants to illustrate his lectures. He would explain this habit to his friends by saying, "Nature is the greatest teacher, and I learn from her best when others are asleep. In the still darkness, before sunrise," Dr. Carver said, "God tells me of the plans I am to fulfill." And that's in a book called The Secret Life of Plants by Peter Tompkins, which is about the life of George Washington Carver, The Secret Life of Plants by Peter Tompkins. And Carver would sit for hours communing in what he called God's little workshop. And he spoke to plants for hours without allowing a single book to enter. He didn't even use the book. And after asking the peanut plant about God's purpose, he realized he had to study three things. Dr. Carver realized after asking the peanut, he's talking to the peanut now, talking to the peanut, he realized three things. He said the three things he realized were compatibility, temperature, and pressure. Compatibility, temperature, and pressure. And with very little information, Carver worked diligently using those three things, and through analysis and synthesis, worked wonders with many creations from the peanut. As we in Black History Month, we mentioned George Washington Carver. He used those three things that he learned from the natural creation: compatibility, temperature, and pressure. And in a meeting at one point with agricultural specialists and farmers, Dr. Carver showed what could be done with the peanut. The audience was doubtful, and the doubt increased when the wizard was asked to explain his methods. It was not difficult to explain, but the methods came to him in flashes of inspiration while walking in the woods. So George Washington Carver would walk in the woods and had a good relationship with the plants, and this is how and why he was such a great scientist. And Carver's scientific knowledge was superseded by his intuition. You see, so Dr. George Washington Carver, as we end up our first chapter on recapturing the African mind, and to those who are tuned in on week after next, we're going to go into chapter two. And if you want to get a copy of my book so that you can follow along with me, we'll give you a chance. You can give me a call at area code 919-956-5972 and order a copy of the book so that you can be right along with us. So that's the natural creation, how it all began. But next time we meet in this class, which will be Saturday after next, we'll discuss what happened after the natural creation and how the missionaries came in and began to destroy what Africans had built. Okay, back to you, Brother Marvin.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Bruce. I appreciate it. And again, the lines are open for question and answer, 845-277-9250. And all the callers that are on the line now, welcome. I'm going to call you by your last four if you're interested in asking a question. I'll just ask you to tell me where you're from and where you're calling from, and we'll let you ask Dr. Bruce a question. But before we get to that,
make a comment.
Bruce,
I just want to comment.
Yeah. Do you want to comment? I understand that. Let's go back to something that you stated earlier before we get into the Q&A, is that the Egyptian or the African origins of Christianity, because a lot of our brothers and sisters don't really know the history. Can you just unpack that for us about why it's so important for us to know the whole history of what it is that many of us here in America believe and trust to be true?
Okay. One reason we need to is because the scriptures that we follow have been tremendously tampered with, have been forged, have been altered, and have been changed around for partisan purposes. They've been changed to fit what people in this society, people in power, want to promote among us as people and among the general society. And as a matter of fact, Brother Marvin, on page 47, because you usually have my book when we're talking, on page 47 of my book, I'll get into it again next week because that's chapter 2, I'm going to talk about why it's important. But it's important so that we can get the truth, first of all, because what we have is a version of the King James Version of the Bible from 1611, which was diligently revised, translated. Scholars were brought together by the black man, King James. We won't get into that right now. That's another story. Don't get excited. Just hold your horses. I don't know when. But, hey, I've been doing a lot of research on this, and we'll find out that King James the VI of Scotland and King James the I of Ireland, who was the king of both countries at the same time, and I could go into some of his history. We'll talk about it later. But you'll find, as I talk about on page 47 of my book, in another book, to do again, as my colleague Dr. Rogers says, I'm giving a source, in a book called Bible Myths and Their Parallels in Other Religions. Let me repeat that. Bible Myths, M-Y-T-H-S, and Their Parallels in Other Religions. Bible Myths and Their Parallels in Other Religions. The author, T.W. Doane, makes a statement. Besides forging, F-O-R-G-I-N-G, forging, lying, L-Y-I-N-G, and deceiving for the cause of Christ, the Christian fathers, now this is not me talking, this is T.W. Doane, a scholar, who wrote the book called Bible Myths and Their Parallels in Other Religions. Doane says, besides forging, lying, and deceiving for the cause of Christ, the Christian fathers destroyed all evidence against themselves and their religion which they came across. Christian divines, or spiritual men, or preachers, or whatever the case may be, Christian divines seem to have always been afraid of too much light. Christian divines seem to have always been afraid of too much light. In the very infancy of printing, Cardinal Wolsey, W-O-L-S-E-Y, he's a cardinal, which I'll talk about them next week. Cardinal Wolsey foresaw its effect on Christianity, and in a speech by Cardinal Wolsey to the clergy, he publicly forewarned them. He forewarned the clergy. This cardinal, Wolsey, forewarned the clergy by making this statement. And I quote Cardinal Wolsey. He says, if we do not destroy this dangerous invention, it will one day destroy us, meaning the printing press. If we do not destroy this dangerous invention, it will one day destroy us. You see? So they recognize that when people begin to get light, to get knowledge, they're going to wake up. They're going to become different. They're going to move differently. They're going to walk differently. They're going to talk differently. They're going to have a whole different aura around them when they have knowledge. Even we as human beings will take on a different form when we have knowledge, and we look at things differently, you see. So the cardinals and the priests recognize that if too much knowledge got out among the people, that those who wanted to keep us enslaved mentally would have a hard time doing it, a hard time doing it. So I'm just going to stop it at that, Brother Marvin. Let's give it back.
All right.
Hope that's
thank somewhere. You, Dr.
And we're going to get into this a little more next week. But, okay, go ahead, bro.
All right.
So much.
And again, we're at our online classroom. Again, we're blessed to have Dr. Bruce Bridges. We're talking about recapturing the African mind. And so we're going to go to the lines now. You have the opportunity to ask any questions or make a comment to the lecture today with Dr. Bruce. And I'm going to start off with 8502. You're on live. Welcome to the show. Do you have a question or comment for Dr. Bruce?
Good afternoon. Thank you. This is Herbert White. I'm from Durham, North Carolina. And
hey, Mr. White, how are you?
I'm doing fine. I just want to say, you know, when we talk about this critical race theory that these white people are trying to keep out of schools, the purpose of that is guilty people never want you to talk about the things that they did. You see?
Good point.
And so what we got right here, Bruce Bridges is a prosecutor, and he's putting all the guilty people on trial with the truth.
All right.
That's all I have to say. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Dr. Bruce, what's your response to that, attorney?
Okay, I like the way Brother Herbert put that. He said, I'm the prosecutor, and I'm on trial. That's exactly right. And so that's why we come up with the evidence to prosecute these people for lying and falsehood. We come up with the evidence, meaning the sources and the research and the information that we have researched and have investigated. We send out our private investigators. We send out our detective to detect what lies they've been taught. I mean, what lies they've been passing on. And so that's right. We as people who speak to our people as scholars, as students of history, we become prosecutors, and we begin to find out. Oh man, because I keep going back to this, but I'm detecting a whole lot of parts of our history that nobody has talked about. Like I mentioned King James a few minutes ago, but there's so much that they've covered. They've covered up the evidence. They've tampered with the evidence. So that case of telling the truth, I mean, we got to throw it out of court. So anyway, yeah, I agree with Brother White. Okay, Brother Marvin.
All right. Knowledge is power, and it's important to know yourself and know your history. All right, we're going over to 1471. 1471, you're live on the Empowerment Hour, or hour and a half now with Dr. Bruce Bridges. Do you have a question or comment?
Good afternoon, brother. How are you doing today?
Hey, how you doing, brother?
This is Dr. Rogers from Wisconsin, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Very cold place it is, but nevertheless, Dr. Bridges has warmed the room, and I'm feeling a lot. This is so rich. He's dropping the truth like you never hear it anywhere, and I appreciate him, and I appreciate this. It's kind of like I recall a lot of times on Saturday afternoons, they would have these conferences throughout the city over in Chicago. And you would have people like Dr. Ben, Dr. Clark, you know, but you have replaced that with this discussion here. And I am so empowered. And then I always am very happy to hear Deacon Herbie White with the Amen Corner over there doing his. And he's that brother, both of them were very powerful in terms of their thoughts and their critical analysis. So the only thing I want to add to what I've just said is that, you know, I call myself a lifelong student of our culture and our learning. And when you sit down and you're studying and you're trying to pull things together, do whatever it is that you're trying to do in terms of learning, It's so important to have these resources at hand. And what Dr. Bridges is doing, and I really hope your audience understands the value in that, what Dr. Bridges is doing is he's laying before you these resources that you can go into and begin to check this history and begin to learn it and read it for yourself as you teach our community, because we got to teach our kids this, and they've got to be able to take this and be empowered to move forward, because we are losing that momentum to teach our kids that. And so this is why this is so, so important. So with that, I'll just say, Dr. Bridges, you're doing it, my brother. You're doing it. So just keep on keeping on. Thank you.
Thank you, Verb. Yeah, I want to respond, Brother Ma.
Yes, sir.
Oh, yeah. Thank you very much, Dr. Rogers, for that comment, man. You when you start calling my name out in the same sentence with Dr. Ben and Dr. Clark and some of those people, man, really makes me feel good to hear that. But so thank you very much for those comments.
Yes, sir.
And that's what we're really trying to do, to reconstruct our history, to recover first, as Herbie White said, to recover as detectives and investigators do, to recover the information. And then once we recover the information, or we gain it again or find it again, recover or uncover the information, then we have to reconstruct what it is that we found into a better-looking picture once we get the correct information. And our picture has been tremendously skewed. All right.
No doubt about it.
Thank you, Dr. Rogers.
Dr. Rogers, did you get a chance to send it out to your people? I wanted to ask you that, too, before you go.
Oh, yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. That's why I had called you earlier. You know, I know you called me back, but I couldn't get to the phone. But, yeah, that's why I called you earlier to
make sure I was on. Okay,
right,
that means there might be some more 414s on that, Brother Marvin. I don't know, but Dr. Rogers out there in that cool. He's out there in the icebox. Yeah, he out there like the white folks. He's in the icebox.
Oh, serious icebox. Right.
All right.
What's the temperature out there today? Okay. I'm right here with you, Brother Marvin.
All right. Again, thanks to Dr. Rogers for that. We're going to go over to 89. And like Dr. Rogers said, you're warming up the room. So, again, we have to be able to understand and educate ourselves. And here's the good part. Dr. Bridges is citing his sources in his book, so you can always go back to see where he's getting this information from. All right, we're going over to 9872, Dr. Bruce. 9872, you're on live with the Empowerment Hour with Dr. Bruce Bridges in the online classroom. Do you have a question or comment?
Good afternoon. Dr. Marvin, Dr. Bridges. I have two statements, not necessarily comments, but statements. One,
yes, sir.
George Washington Carver did not create peanut butter because he had much better
That's right.
to do. Statement two, give not up, but rather out. Goodbye.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, brother. Dr. Bruce.
Yes, sir. Oh, not too much I can say. I agree about the what the brother said about the peanut butter. And we'll talk a little more about Dr. Carver, too, a little later on. Okay, because I know your lines are full.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, sir, for calling. 1683, you're on live with Dr. Bruce. Do you have a question or comment?
Good afternoon, brothers, and Dr. Bruce, thanks for what you're doing with Brother Marvin and others. It's highly appreciated and needed as well. This is Brother Booker here in Richmond, Virginia, sitting
Brother
in my
Booker.
Car as I listen to you gentlemen, and loving every moment of it. I just got a comment and a question, and my comment is, something Desmond Tutu said one time, and it adds to what Dr. Bruce was talking about earlier. Desmond said, you know, when the white man first got to Africa, we had the land, they had the Bibles. He said, and they taught us how to pray with our eyes closed. And when we opened our eyes, they had the land, and we had the Bibles. And that seriously understanding what he was saying, if we understand what he was saying and what that meant and what that means, is powerful. We had the land. We had the resources. We had everything. When they came, but then they taught us how to pray with our eyes closed. And when we opened our eyes, they had all the resources, all the land, everything, and we had the Bible that had been printed somewhere. Okay? And then my question is, because, you know, Black History Month and dealing with the students, you know, I asked them, what were we before slaves? And no one knows the answer. They can't, you know, ask that question. So my question is, who created the black man and woman? And is our creator, in fact, a man? That's all I have, gentlemen. I'll listen. Thank you again for your time and all you do.
Now, when you say who created the black man and woman, let me ask you that, though, brother, before you go, before you hang up.
Yes, sir.
When you say who created the black man, you mean this human being that we have in America today, and how did we get this way, or what?
The original man and woman, the original black man and woman, who we say, some say, is the mother and father of the planet Earth, goddess of the universe. Who?
All right, right, all right, all right. Yeah. We thank you for. Thank you for your question. Yes, when you look at the origin of human beings, they have to be traced back to Africa, down to the area of the Olduvai Gorge, as many of those archaeologists most were white, they were definitely white. People like Dr. Raymond Dart, and people like the brother and the sister who did the digging in Africa, we find that these people were early on the stage of civilization, and when you study it, as Elijah Muhammad used to say, there's really no birth record to the black man and black woman. We can find remnants that go back, as they talked about with Lucy, back to 3.5 or 4 million years ago. And every time they keep finding them, they're going back further and further and further, and find out that there's no record to our creation. And there's no time that we weren't here. You see, it's what we really find out. That's really the case. Nobody really knows when, where, how that the African man and woman came onto the planet. But we do know, as Elijah Muhammad used to say, we were the original man and woman, no doubt about that. But just when and how we were created, and if we want to get into some of the mythology, I guess you might say, of the Nation of Islam, he talked about being created in triple darkness and all that kind of thing, but Mary Leakey and her husband, LSB Leakey, and Dr. Broom, and these are several of the white archaeologists who I've studied. They just put this human being in Africa, but just how and who and that kind of thing, nobody actually knows. Okay, Brother Marvin.
All right. Again, you're listening live to Dr. Bruce, our online classroom, Recapturing the African Mind. We're finishing Chapter 1, and we're doing a series, particularly in African Black History Month, and we need to know our history desperately so we can know ourselves and we can know how to move forward. We're going over to 6511. 6511, welcome to the show. You're on live with Dr. Bruce. Do you have a question or comment? Six five one one. I think they're just listening, Dr. Bruce. Maybe we'll go back to them. All right, let's go over to 7061. 7061. Coming over to you. You're live on the Empowerment Hour with Dr. Bruce. We're recapturing the African mind. Do you have a question or comment?
The great thing about our weather team is we all have
7061. All right. Got a lot of listeners today, Dr. Bruce. That's good, paying attention. So, Dr. Bruce, let me ask you a question before we go to the next caller. What inspired you to get started on your journey? Did I lose you, Dr. Bruce?
Oh, I'm here. I was on mute, so you went ahead and know it. Now you got me?
Okay. Yeah. Yes, sir.
Okay. Yeah. Being a student during the tumultuous and turbulent times of the late 1960s and early 1970s, I became very sensitive to what was happening in the civil rights movement. And then I started seeing when I'd be on the streets with some of the leadership in Durham, North Carolina, I'd see brothers selling Black Panther Party newspapers. I'd see brothers on the corners with the Muhammad Speaks newspapers. And I was always interested in what they were saying and information they were trying to give to our people. So I began to visit these meetings of these different organizations, and I was opened up to the fact that there's something other than what our teachers and our trainers at these colleges and universities were giving us. And once I became open to that, I've always been one to want to be a little different and not to just give out the same information that our teachers give us and just regurgitate what they're telling us. I wanted something different, so I just started doing research and reading and studying and leaving Durham, North Carolina, and traveling to other cities and to other parts of this country, to bookstores and thrift stores and everywhere there was knowledge. And I really meant to make this point, but I forgot about it, but it just came back to me when I was talking about how we have to gather knowledge from all sources. In botany, there's a plant that we all are familiar with, and that plant is called the cactus. And the cactus plant now is called, it's what we call a xerophyte, X-E-R-O-P-H-Y-T-E, a xerophyte, X-E-R-O. P-H-Y-T-A, that X taking the sound of Z. But the cactus is what you call a xerophyte. And a xerophyte, fight from the word phylum, and zero meaning lifeless or dead or dry. It's a plant found in dry areas. And the cactus is a plant that only receives water every now and then. And so that's why when we used to look at these old Western movies and you see when they're out in the deserts of Arizona, they could crack open the cactus and drink the water or the liquid from the cactus, and they could quench their thirst. Well, the cactus, because it only receives water every now and then, being in a desert environment, not knowing when it will get weather, water. It stores its water up, and it has tiny holes in it. And these little holes in the ends of the cactus plant can get water from the air, because when you look at the air contains water. And we can't see it, but that cactus is always drawing in water from the air to provide its growth and perpetuation. And we as a people have to be the same. We live in a dry, lifeless environment in this country and in the world when it comes to knowledge. So we have to operate like that cactus plant. Since we're in a dry area and we're seeking water or knowledge in this case, I do a lecture in some of my geography classes comparing water and land. That's another lecture, but I think that's in my book. We might talk about it a little later on. But anyway, so the human being mind has to be like the cactus. It has to, first of all, realize it's in a dry, lifeless area, and so therefore it has to start getting water or knowledge any way it can, drawing it in from the air. And so that's what I start to do. I start to get knowledge and information in any way I can from any source that I could. I check it out and research it to make sure it was, was valid. But that's what you have to do. We have to operate like that. Just draw it in wherever you can and store it. And then when time comes to give it up, you can give it up, and nobody can question it when you give your facts and your sources. You can stand anywhere. As an example, I was speaking one time. I think I was out in Wyoming at the University of Wyoming, and at the end of the lecture, there was like your program here. This was in a lecture hall. But this white woman stood up and asked me a question about Beethoven. And because I had mentioned the African traits and characters of Beethoven and his looks and his music and the sound of his music and the Africanness of it. And so she questioned it. She said, do you have any facts to prove that Beethoven was, as you said, of African descent? I said, yes, ma'am, I do. I said, but let me ask you a question. Do you have any facts or proof that he was anything other than African?
All right.
And that got that kind of handcuffed her right there. You see, most of this stuff that these white people have given us, when I say stuff, this so-called information, this so-called knowledge, this so-called academia that they've given us, it can't really be supported unless they've tampered with it, as they did the scripture of the Bible, unless they've altered it to make it suit their purposes. As an example, and I keep going back to this, I'm going to drop this pretty soon as I continue my research. As an example, when you begin to see the pictures, when you begin to see the portraits of the kings and queens of Europe, you will begin to find out that they have taken these portraits and pictures, and these artists have whitened them to make them look white, and they have hidden the true pictures and portraits of some of those great kings and nobles out of our history down in the vaults and the libraries of the rich and the wealthy who could afford to cover this material. And so what we see is fake and an imposterous type situation, and it's not really the truth. So we, as Brother Herbie says, we begin to investigate. We sent out the detectives, and we began to try to find out the truth, because they have really, really, oh, man. Let's go to another question. I can't, I'm speechless.
All right. Real quick, if you want to call in and ask a question or make a comment, 845-277-9250. All right, we're going back to the lines. 0673, you're live on the Empowerment Hour. Do you have a question or comment?
Just a brother, Al Kevlon from Gabriel Prosser City, and Bruce, is always an honor. I got a question and a comment. Those manipulators of the truth took the sun, S-U-N, in the heavens that rose from the depth of night and changed it to the sun, S-O-N, Jesus rising from the earth. What is the correlation between the 12 disciples of Jesus and the heavens? What is the correlation between the 12 disciples of Jesus and the heavens? That's my question.
Thank you for your question, Brother Akebalon. Those 12 disciples are really symbolic of the 12 houses of the zodiac. There's a book I can refer our listeners to called Christianity Before Christ, by Kersey Graves, and he talks about this, Christianity Before Christ. Or I can refer you to The World's Saviors by C.H. Vail, V-A-I-L, The World's Saviors by C.H. Vail. He talks about it. But you have Jesus representing the Son, and then you have the disciples around him, which are the 12 houses of the zodiac, the Gemini, the Aquarius, the Leo, the Sagittarius, the Scorpio, you see, the Leo. So this is what it really is about. There's also another book that you can read, which I can't recall the author, called Stella Theology, or the Theology of the Stars, Stella, S-T-E-L-L-A-R, not like the woman Stella, S-T-E-L-L-A, but Stella, S-T-E-L-L-A-R, which means the stars, Stella Theology, and it discusses this. And it goes back, which was a good question by Kim, to our topic today, the natural creation. It goes back to the fact that our ancestors were studying the natural creation, and they saw things in the heavens, and then from these things that they saw in the heavens, they began to relate to things that are going on earth, and began to tell stone tales and myths. And we have to realize now, when we study mythology is not without truth. Mythology has truth in it, you see. And when you interpret the mythology, you can find the truth, you see. So a myth is not totally false. But anyway, that's where it is. You got 12 disciples, you got 12 houses over there, you got the son in the middle of being Jesus. Okay, Brother Mama, got any more good callers there?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Let's swing on over to Brother George really quickly. But before we get to Brother George, one of the tenets of the NAAEA is education. And why is education, particularly because we're in Black African History Month, why is it so important to our people right now?
Oh, is that for me? I thought it was for Brother George. Okay.
Yes, sir.
Also,
no,
it's
that's for you, sir.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, good. Yeah, it's important so that we can, as you said, we can know who we are. And I always have to quote Malcolm on this. The knowledge of history inspires and develops the motives of human action. When you know who you are, then you know where you came, and then you also have direction as to which way you should go when you know who you are. And you can really tell people who have a knowledge of themselves by the comments that they make and by the things that you see them doing and that kind of thing. For example, when we look at our athletes and our entertainers, most of them, not all of them, but when we look at most of our athletes and entertainers, we can tell by what comes out of their mouths and by their actions, you can tell that they know very little, if anything, about who they are as a people. And when they do come with something of knowledge or information or something inspirational, something illuminating, that's very good. And I think about how oftentimes we as people, being talented, we are used in this society. Now, you remember many years ago, they would never use dark-skinned people, especially dark-skinned sisters, in movies or on television. They don't do it too much now. But the sister, help me out with, I can't even think of a name now. The dark complexion sister from South Carolina who grew up on the plantation. Maybe some of y'all know who I'm talking about now. And Brother Bozeman, who played the Black Panther. You wouldn't see people who look like they do now, but they find that we're talented, and then when we're talented, if they can use that talent, they will, but if they can't use you, they push you to the side. As a matter of fact, there's a documentary out now, Halle Berry has a documentary, and she and some other African-American women are discussing what it is that you have to go through in Hollywood to be successful. So when you know who you are, sometimes you have to pay the price or keep it hidden till you get a chance. But what I don't understand is they say, well, she or he knows who we are and can speak out and make certain statements, but they're afraid of losing their job. When do you have it? When is Oprah Winfrey? What more does it take for her to have to be secure enough to speak out? Does she need more? What's the problem? Why don't you hear her standing up making these strong statements? There's a reason. Why don't you hear you? Anyway, when you know who you are, you become a different person altogether.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Bruce. We're going to swing on over to Brother George. Brother George.
Yes, sir. What I wanted to say was today was I got a short statement. I wanted to address the fact that I know it's many times it's difficult to absorb new information. And I wanted to give an example of a person, Dr. Ray Higgins. And he's the head of the African Village Church. And before he gives a lecture, he gives a forewarning. And he talks about that every human being has a circle knowledge familiar with. And he wanted his congregation to know, at this moment in time, I'm getting ready to go outside of that circle of knowledge that you have. And we're experiencing that today. What I always suggest to our people is that this is a very challenging time for us, and that this world, the knowledge of this world has actually been turned upside down. And I mentioned once about how the six-pointed star is a symbolization of that. which maybe Bruce can speak on that. But I really, you know, want our people, you know, to just hold on. It might be, you know, might be hurtful. It might be painful to hear a different version of what's going on in the world and what has went on in the world and where things actually originated. But at some point, we have to learn this information in order to redirect ourselves back to the path that we need to be on. So, brother, that's basically what I wanted to say.
All right. Thank you, Brother George.
The star, I would appreciate that.
Yeah, I'd like to maybe do that since I'm looking at our time, and let's do that. Maybe we might do that next week then. That's all, because I don't, you know.
All right. Let's slide on down. We got 5347. You're on live. Do you have a question or comment for Dr. Bruce?
Hey, how you guys doing over there?
Hey, how are you?
I'm just listening, man. Good conversation today. How long are you guys on today?
All right, we're going to be on until 3:30 Eastern, so we got about 15 more minutes left in the show.
Okay, well, I like you guys because Bruce was alluding a minute ago about Oprah Winfrey being able to speak out during this time, and I've been trying to get some good constructive conversation about the prevalence of the people, and I'm glad grassrooted, brother, about the people that can speak out or in good positions that don't speak out or got the jobs and what have you, and we can't count on them. So that's enough for me to say. Can you guys give some constructive thought to that? Starting with Dr. Bruce, and I'll listen to what you guys go and throw it out on the air for me from there. Good program, brother. Keep up the good work.
All right. Thank you, sir. Dr. Bruce.
Yes, I just wanted to say I think that another thing that happened to us on the plantations of America, and that's what we still are on the plantations of America, and that is the slave master always taught us to have fear of him. And fear is a factor in the positions that many of us take as a people. We fear what might happen to us if we say certain things. But it is, as I've always said, and I always say it's when people have financial resources and have pretty much everything they need and lifestyles that they enjoy, I just always like to say, as Frederick Douglass says, where there is no struggle, there is no progress. Men who profess to favor freedom and yet deprecate agitation are like men who want the crops but don't want to plow the fields. They're like men who want the rain without the thunder and the lightning. They're men who want the roar of the ocean without the many waters that accompany it. Power concedes nothing without a demand. It never has and it never will. So if we don't begin to demand to stand up like our sister's doing, Nicole, I got to give her credit. Every program I see her on, she's always standing up for her 1619 project. She's standing up. She's speaking out. I heard Angela Davis the other day on an interview, and Angela Davis was talking about the fact that when the new judge is appointed by Biden, she said that she'd like for it to be a black judge, a black woman judge, which it probably will be. But she said that just because it's a black woman judge, that doesn't make any difference to her. She says we don't need any just because it's a black person. We have a black person on the court right now, Superior Court now, Clarence Thomas. But what difference is he making? You know? When is he speaking truth to power? And Angela Davis even talked about him. She called him a scumbag or something. I can't remember the exact word, but she called him a very, very, very low-sounding term for being on the Supreme Court for all these years and not stand up for anything. So she made a statement. I loved it when she said it. She says, I want a black female judge, but not just a black female judge to have a black face there, but it must be somebody who's going to stand up for something. If you're going to be the head of some organization or you're going to win an Oscar and get a chance to speak before the whole world when you receive your Oscar or when you receive your medal from the Olympics or when you get a chance to be in front of the camera for winning the Super Bowl or the NBA championship, say something, drop something about your people and your culture and your heritage. Reinvent Muhammad Ali. Reinvent H.R.A.P. Brown. Reinvent Jim Brown as he did many years ago. And use that platform or use that position to stand up for your people. That's all. All right, Brother Marlon.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Bruce. I just like to say Brian Flores is a perfect example in the NFL. Right, about standing up. And many of us, because of the purse strings, like Dr. Bruce mentioned, right, are going to be quiet because they don't want to lose that money. But the brothers put the NFL out there saying that they're colluding and they're doing some things that's just not right. And so
that's
for
right.
him to stand up and get the scrutiny that he's going to face, he may never be able to coach again in the NFL, kind of like Colin Kaepernick when he stood up for what he believed
right.
is true. So our people have been punished for years, for decades, and for centuries for standing up, and it's just no different now. It's just a different type of lynching. Brother George, you want to
make examples? And they make examples, like you said, out of people like Kaepernick, and they make examples out of people like Muhammad Ali. They make examples out of people like John Carlos and Tommy Smith. They make examples
yes,
out of people when you begin to stand up. They do. And many years ago now, they would you see what they did to Toussaint Louverture. You see what they did
mm-hmm.
to Nat Turner. You see what happened to Denmark Vesey. You see what happened to black people who begin to stand up. They will kill you. But even today, when you say kill does not necessarily mean taking the life or taking the breath out of you. Killing can mean doing things to you where you can no longer operate in society. You're really dead, you see. So it's the same thing, but just on another level. Got any more calls, Brother Marvin?
Yes, sir. Going right back to the lines. I wanted to see if Brother George had any comments before we get to 9770. Brother George, you want to say anything on that?
Well, just a quick one. Economics. When we build a firm enough economic base, they can't affect us like that. You know, and we could create our own leagues here. And I think that's what the big baller thing is all about. But go ahead.
True.
Go ahead to the line.
So true. 9770, you're on live with Dr. Bruce. And it is Black History Month. Do you have a question or comment?
I came in late, so I didn't hear all of it. But very good show, very good information. Thank you for having me.
I'm sorry, ma'am. Can you repeat that, please?
Very good show. Very good information, and thank you for having Dr. Bruce on.
Okay. Thank you for calling, and thank you for listening.
All right. Thank you.
Dr. Bruce.
Yes, sir. Oh, yeah. Really appreciate that phone call. Really appreciate that phone. And I'm looking forward to being back again week after next, and to discuss the next chapter of the book, Missionaries as Tools in the Control of African People. And for those who may want to order a copy of my book, they can just give me a call at area code 919-956-5972. Matter of fact, I just got some new ones, some fresh ones printed. Haven't even opened the box yet, brand new copies. So, and also to those who are tuned in, let your friends and other people know about the program and that we're on every other weekend. Well, we're on every week, but I'll be back week after next. But pass the word around that this is going on Brother Marvin's show.
Yeah, it's all about African-American empowerment or African empowerment, black people, colored people, whatever you want to call yourself. We're trying to educate, motivate, inspire, and really give our people the education and the knowledge that we need to improve ourselves. And that's what it's all about. So we got about 5 minutes left or so. Dr. Bruce, I want to get a closing statement from you. And then again, Dr. Bruce will be back on the 19th, tell your friends, as we continue this lecture series on recapturing the African mind. Dr. Bruce.
All right. Upcoming Black History Month chapters in honor of Dr. Carter G. Woodson. On next week, we'll be discussing missionaries as tools in the mind control of Africans. I repeat that, missionaries. A lot of our listeners may not like that necessarily, but as Brother George said, just take your time and let it sink in and listen to the discussion and try to absorb it. But our topic will be missionaries as tools in the mind control of Africans. And that chapter starts off, it says, in the words of Bob Marley, as we begin to close out, the Babylon system is the vampire sucking the blood of the children day by day, building church and university, deceiving the people continually. The Babylon system is the vampire sucking the blood of the children day by day, building church and university, deceiving the people continually. And as I said in my opening to this discussion, I discovered that Europeans will always build two institutions to take control of the minds of the indigenous people that they colonize. And those two institutions are churches and universities. And we're going to be discussing that on next week.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Bruce. Thank you for a powerful session today as we continue our online series and the online classroom, Recapturing the African Mind. Brother George, final comments from you, sir.
Well, it was a great show. And, I really appreciate all of the listeners, support what we're doing, and at least try to go tell five friends to join on the next week when we have our show. And let's build something special here, brothers and sisters.
All right. Thank you, Brother George. Thank you, Dr. Bruce. So as we come to a close, just a couple of things to think about. We have the power to change our lives and our reality. It is now up to us. No one is standing in our way except us. But knowledge is power. And we have the tools to educate ourselves now. And education is so important. It's important to this moment, and it's important to our future. Education is the important tool that we can use to convict, but also to liberate. We can use education as a tool to inform, inspire, motivate, and empower. I'm challenging you to use your voice in however way you see fit to make your world better, to make our communities better, to make our families better. You are on this earth right now for a purpose. You're on this call listening right now to the show. Share it with somebody. We are about empowering our people that we will get back to our right standing. And it is people like Dr. Bruce and all of our greats that continue to put the work in to educate, inspire, motivate, and empower our people. But now, it's up to you to take the next step, to prepare yourself and our next generation for a future that we can't see. How do we do that? We have to do the work of working on ourselves, one individual at a time. It's your mind and mine hooking together to say we want change. We want to get better. We want to get stronger. And we have to understand the tools that are available to us. Again, we have the economy of a nation. When we coalesce and come together to have a collective consciousness to better our people, to better our communities, to love on each other again, to love instead of hurt, to find peace instead of hate, and to become the best people that we can be, that's our advantage. Let's continue to find ourselves and find a way to find a moment to look back at our ancient past, our ancient ancestors, and give them honor for the work that they did. And then move forward to our ancestors that were brought here on ships, chattel and chain, to carry this nation on their backs and honor them and the work that they put in that you could be here today. It's been 1 hour and a half of motivation and personal empowerment. Join us next week as we continue our empowerment series for African Americans. And don't forget, Become the best person that you can be, and let that impossible dream come true in you and our future. I'm Marvin Rome. Have a great week. Peace and blessings, brothers and sisters. Have a great day. Oh, yeah. Oh, 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 yeah.